Film Nerds Unlimited. Lo-fi movie conversations with high-quality movie connoisseurs. Issue 55. Craig Hamilton of CitizenCraig.com. Matt Scalisi, editor of FilmNerds.com.
Okay, what's up, Matt?
Hey, Craig.
How are you?
I'm good. I'm just waiting to pick up my my food at this drive-thru.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Well, we should also say hello, listeners. We haven't forgotten you out there. You're a part of this, too. A one-way.
Yeah, sure.
Well, have you noticed it's in the air, and it's on the plant life. It's changing. The leaves.
Oh, they're everywhere.
And the air is getting cooler. And there's a
yeah.
there's like a golden tint to the sun these days. It must be October.
I mean, yeah, it's still 77 and out in Birmingham where I am. But I can fake it. I can go with it.
Oh, okay, okay. Well, yeah. So you're a horror movie fan, right?
I would say so, yeah. I mean, I think I have, like, parts of the horror movie landscape that really appeal to me a lot. Even certain kinds of movies, certain kinds of horror movies, even when I can admit they're not good, I still enjoy them.
Yeah, same here, and I don't have opportunities like I used to these days to be able to watch them because my life partner hates horror films. So, this must be the time where you get your food.
I just picked it up, yeah.
Oh, cool, so you didn't have to say anything.
So, no, I was completely rude to the people at the drive-thru, so we're all done now, yeah. So Jen, your wife, she's not a horror movie fan.
No, she can't watch it.
Yeah, my wife, actually, Francesca does not particularly like horror movies either, although there are times where she'll make exceptions, and I've been trying to figure out what the pattern is, but I can't really. There's just some that she's, like, randomly okay with, and she's into it, but, like, as a general rule, she doesn't like it.
That's vexing.
I'll have a unified theory of Francesca horror film one day, but I don't have it yet.
A tough nut to crack.
Yeah.
Jen, she puts her family members in the position of the people getting gutted and strangled and what have you. So she just can't watch anything. In fact, we'll sleep with the lights on if she even hears the plot of a movie.
Yeah, that's another one. That's another thing, Francesca, is if I come home from seeing a horror movie, she won't let me talk to her about it or tell her anything that happens in the movie. Because she's like, that's just as bad as if I saw it.
You know what? That's a good Film Nerds Unlimited idea, is to get maybe the two of them and anyone else.
Yeah.
And get them on and have a discussion about why they can't watch horror films.
Right. They probably won't want to talk about it, though, because they'll get scared.
That's true, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, that's not this episode, listeners. We are actually going to discuss, how to put it, that gut-wrenching, that most alive you can feel, that raw emotion of horror and fear that you get from a really good horror film, that moment where you actually dread the next every second, right? After that.
Yeah.
Like,
right.
Like
adrenaline.
When you get that feeling like, I don't think I can watch this anymore. I might have to leave or turn it off.
Yes, that's the best, I would say.
Yeah.
That's when you've peaked in a horror movie.
And, you know, at least for me, because my sister and I grew up, every weekend there's this old, like, video rental place where you could get, like, two for a dollar each. And inevitably, every week, one of the sections that you could use that deal for was a horror section. So we would knock out, like, Halloween's, the Friday the 13th series, all kinds of, you know, whatever Joe Bob Briggs suggested on Monster Vision. But, and so, you know, of course, on the onset, that feeling that we're talking about, that occurred fairly often. But then as we became desensitized with all the horror films, and we're exposed to the very, you know, formulaic and familiar plots and what have you. Those, that feeling was fewer and far between. So I'd like to discuss with you what, which films give you that feeling or have ever given you that feeling.
Yeah, well, the first one I remember as a kid being really scared of was, and I actually can't remember which one from the franchise it was, but it was one of the Child's Play movies. And it's funny because I've seen them since, and actually the first one is not, I think it actually holds up pretty well. I think it's actually a pretty, it's a pretty good movie. I would say it's an effective scary movie, as cheesy as certain parts of it are. But when I was a kid, I saw parts of it on probably USA Network. May have been the Sci-Fi Channel, I don't know. I feel like it was USA for some reason. And, you know, just not really... I remember I later had it explained to me by a classmate at school, like, what the setup was, that it was... Because the setup is really ridiculous. It's like a serial killer, you know, gets his spirit put into a doll by a voodoo priestess or something. It's pretty ridiculous, but it doesn't really, the setup is completely irrelevant because all the whole reason the movie works is that at some point you get to this point in the movie where there's a doll that is alive and trying to kill people. And that's all that matters. I frankly, it'd probably be a better movie if they didn't explain it.
Yeah.
And there's just, you know, it's such a lo-fi thing. Like, there's some puppetry when you see the doll's face, usually, and when he's talking, and then it's mixed with some shots of what is obviously a little person actor with a, you know, with a fake plastic face piece on running around, and, you know, just that very simple combination of those two elements sells you on it. And I think for some reason when that idea first gets planted in your head, you never stop thinking about it. And anytime you ever see a doll that is has remotely human proportions, you always think forever, like, oh, what if that thing jumped down off the shelf and ran over and tried to kill me?
Yeah.
And it's really unsettling, and it's a thing that you, like, can't stop, especially the first time you're introduced to it, I think, you can't stop thinking about it for a few days. And, you know, having nightmares about it. And, again, like, it really, I don't think about it all the time anymore, but it's still a thing that probably every time I see a doll around that size, I think about that movie.
Do you ever just walk up to, like, a doll in a store, wherever you find a doll like that sitting somewhere, and just kind of stare at it and kind of say to it, I know you're alive back there. Just, like...
I probably would be too scared to do that because I just don't want to take the chance. It's not worth it.
In case there's a soul inside.
I don't know why it bothers me so much. It's probably just because of how it bothered me as a kid. I think it's really funny though that, I mean, I'm sure that movie did not invent the idea of people being creeped out by dolls, but it's definitely the first one I'm aware of being made into a legitimate horror movie.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's such a simple, like I said, just like a simple, dumb concept, and it's really, really disturbing and creepy and never leaves you once it gets in your head. I remember reading Roger Ebert's review of it, and even he at the time when it came out was like, you know, this is kind of a dumb movie, but it is scary as hell. Like,
yeah.
It's really scary. And it's just like kind of an iconic thing for me as a kid. It was one of those where this is a thing I think you experience often as a kid where I was really, really scared by what little I saw, and then I just was like, I have to see the rest of this movie. Like, I can't turn it off now. I need to see what happens.
Yeah. You're more afraid of your own imagination.
Right. I need to see how the movie ends.
Yeah. You know, I think I saw when I was a kid, I think it was a Twilight episode or something where this father experiences like his daughter's doll, like talking to him or doing stuff. And it's just him constantly trying to get rid of it.
Yeah, there definitely is a Twilight Zone that has like a pull string doll that says stuff.
Yeah, yes, and yeah, that really got to me, and I remember virtually nothing about that episode, but it's just the image of a doll coming to life is frightening.
Yeah, for sure. Did you have one when you were a kid, Craig? Like a specific one that you remember that's like really stuck with you?
But from the time before I actually started watching horror movies consistently, it was more of a moment where me and my friend, like when we would hang out, I would get him to like recall what happens in a movie that I had never seen, and it was always the same movie, and it was It. But just him recalling what happened, even like the little nuanced moments between the kids and when they're older and the connections and stuff like that. It just frightened me so bad. And when I actually saw the movie itself, I think it paled in comparison to my imagination. But I don't know if you had any moments where you like hung out with like friends when you were really like little and they would tell you stuff they had seen and you hadn't seen and you were just like horrified.
Oh, yeah. I feel like that was a big playground topic of discussion would be kids who, again, either they like saw a bunch of stuff on USA or... they had parents that had very different standards than my parents.
Right.
And they showed them, like, really messed up movies. And, yeah, they'd come to school and say, like, oh, yeah, you know, there's this one. I remember when Terminator 2 came out, some of my classmates saw it. And I definitely was not old enough that my parents would let me see it. And I just remember kids coming into school saying, like, yeah, there's this one part. He stabs a guy through the mouth. And then I was like, cold milk, and there's like milk and blood running everywhere. And I remember just thinking, like, God, I never want to see this movie. What the hell is this movie?
Ketchup and mayonnaise. Wow. Yeah. Well, when I really kind of got into watching it as a hobby, watching horror films as a hobby, I think. Obviously, Halloween was one of the first ones, and the first Friday the 13th really affected me a lot. But I think one of the more just raw, like, in-the-moment, pure feeling of just straight-up fear was when my friends and I bought, I guess we were in the eighth grade, we bought tickets to Jingle All the Way. But we actually went in to see Scream. But now, watching that movie now, I still think it's an effective horror film. And I miss completely any homage or any kind of winks or nods or any kind of, like, obvious camp or hokiness.
Right.
That went over my head. And the fear of being caught for sneaking in, coupled with just this horror movie tropes done so effectively, just like obliterated my, you know, ability to sleep for the next week. It was that one was probably my first real hit.
Well, I think that's an interesting one because it actually, you know, you don't really have to, even though I do think it makes it a really good movie. I think not being aware of the tropes, and you know, it just still works on a basic level as a good horror movie, and it's scary and it's brutal, and but you know, it's not one of those. It's not a self-aware horror movie that does that. You know, so many of the movies that you could call that sort of self-aware horror movie, they're not concerned enough with actually creating tension, and they really just become comedies. you know, like gross comedies. And to me, I've never really enjoyed that kind of movie. It's a lot more fun to me when a filmmaker is talented enough to actually make me scared. And if he can joke around about what he's doing while still effectively doing it, then he's probably really good at it. And
yeah.
That's, you know, Scream makes fun of horror movies while also being really good at being a horror movie.
Yeah. That's exactly right. What do you have any other ones?
Well, I mean, I would say what really does it for me now, like as I've gotten older, I guess, is, you know, and Ben Stark and Ben Flanagan talked a little bit about this on their podcast, but definitely as a general concept, things where, you know, there's something very, very hyper-realistic and normal going on, and there's one thing that's just really off, and you can't figure out what's going on. That kind of inherently has a nightmarish quality to me.
Yeah.
And honestly, it's a big part of why I like found footage horror movies, you know, when they're done well, because I think there's, you know, the POV quality of it and the idea that, you know, you're experiencing something that really happened, but there's just one thing that's very off that shouldn't be going on in the frame. That just hits something primal in me, even if it's not particularly a well-executed version of that. So, you know, the Paranormal Activity movies really, really work for me, at least in certain moments. You know, I don't ever really care that much about the characters in those movies because they're not written very well and the acting isn't very good. But the scare moments in those movies work really well, and I think it's because, you know, the way they're shot resembles the way that I have nightmares, I think, which is, you know, it's from my own, you know, perspective that I'm seeing it happen. There's long periods of sort of stillness and nothing happening and everything being very normal, and then there's just one thing that happens that's just wrong, that's not happening the right way. And that really, really, you know, works on me pretty consistently. Even, you know, I'll use a quick example. They made a spinoff from the Paranormal Activity series called The Marked Ones, which is kind of, it's just like, you know, sort of aimed at a Latino audience, and the characters are, again, they're not particularly interesting. The plot kind of goes all over the place, but there's a scene where, and it's a pretty long scene, where it's two kids, two like teenagers, making out in a vacant apartment. And, you know, it's progressing at a fairly natural rate of a makeout. And, you know, people are, you watch it with kind of a, you know, it doesn't feel like a sex scene in a movie because there's nothing glamorous being done. The camera's not moving, it's sitting still. And, you know, one of the characters gets up and leaves, and the other one sort of hears some sound coming out of the floor. And then, basically, there's a very sudden and strange and unexpected and nightmarish thing that happens that actually does not have much of, it doesn't have even like a satisfying conclusion to it. So this random thing happens. There's no explanation for it, and then it kind of just stops, and you kind of move on with the rest of the movie, and it really, the lack of explanation for it might be the scariest part of it, just that this, like, this sort of normal-seeming scene of life just gets interrupted by this completely horrifying, unexpected thing, and then everything just goes back to normal, and you just think, like, you know, what is going on underneath all of this? Like, what has been here the whole time? You know, and I think the good moments of found footage horror movies do that. They don't try to give a plot explanation to it. It's just something really weird and wrong happened out of nowhere.
Yeah, I'm glad you mentioned the found footage because I actually have two I've got like a list of movies that have, you know, given me that, as you put, that primal feeling of just being just afraid or unsure. The original Paranormal Activity, I put on there because when I was watching that in the theater, you're not sure. You're really unsure when something's going to happen. There are no cues. Like a formulaic old, you know, 80s horror film, you tend to pick up, you know, you can kind of predict when something might happen. But with Paranormal Activity, at least for me, it was brand new territory from that perspective. I was not ready for most of the things that happened, and I was very aware of my heart rate. And it was just through the roof the entire time. That really conjured up, no pun intended, that really horrifying feeling for me. And then, of course, the Blair Witch Project way back in the day when I saw it, which was off the charts, brand new territory for me. Of course, with that crazy marketing scheme they went through and everything. But if the found footage is done right, and as you said, it's sort of everything's normal except for like one thing. And I think in that way, it's kind of, Hitchcock kind of touches on that a little bit. It's like you take away that the element of being able to get your bearings, and it just ups the ante on the scare factor, for me at least.
But, yeah, and I mean, the other thing, this is really kind of, I think there's a connection between these two things, but, sorry, I'm eating a burger still. the other movies that are sort of lo-fi horror movies from recent years that have been really effective with audiences and have had a lot of success, these movies like The Conjuring and the Insidious movie, you know, they very much are, like you said, they do cue you to what's going to happen. I mean, they have a score, they're
right,
shot like traditional looking movies. But I think that kind of lo-fi aspect of them helps bring about some of that unsettling feeling, because again, it makes it more that contrast of something that looks very real and normal with something that definitely shouldn't be there and is out of place. And the first Insidious movie was so super effective for me. It's on paper, it sounds like a very run-of-the-mill, very pedestrian horror movie. And when you watch it, for some reason, it really works a cut above the rest of this sort of PG-13 thriller genre. And I think it's just, they did such an excellent job of mixing, you know, very average, normal-looking life with the sort of horrifically out-of-place, nightmare-type details. You know, I think Poltergeist is probably a good comparison. I think Insidious feels a lot like that kind of movie, where it's this very normal family, and just things just start disturbing that normalness right away.
Yeah, and there are definitely some that still have those kind of cues that really got me. But it's and for instance, it's, I've sort of been in a quest to find that feeling, you know, ever since I began to realize that they don't come as frequently. The more you watch, the more desensitized you become, and the more you can kind of get used to being scared or whatever. But whenever there's a fresh take on something, or whether a director just does it, executes it so well, an old way, but does it so well that it still hits you. I remember early on when I was, you know, aware of the fact that horror movies were sort of not as scary to me anymore, I was really searching for it, and I found one around Halloween in 2001 at the Ferguson Theater. and it was the Texas Chainsaw Massacre. And there was something wrong with the projection, which was totally fine. And I just remember that about that. But
it's probably Graham Flanagan's fault.
I'm sure it was his screening for sure. It was just kind of like the film or something every now and then had like a little black like frame or something in it. But that was the first time I'd ever seen that movie, the original Texas Chainsaw Massacre. And it knocked me in the gut. My jaw was on the floor. And that's an example of a low-budget movie way back, you know, before horror movies were like this big, you know, let's make a crap load of them and churn them out. And, man, it was so effective for me. And I think it was just in its relentlessness and how little it cares for its characters and just how that opening, that first kill with that sliding door and the, oh my goodness, and just the score afterwards was just that was the beginning of a very horrifying and long night. But I loved it. I loved every second of it.
I think people have tried to like recreate that intensity, and it never seems to be as effective, although, because I think you're right, Craig. I think that like a lot of people sense that there's been a desensitization when it comes to horror movies, and you can't recapture, you can't take America back to being the 1970s anymore, where we're still shocked by violence. I mean, we have, you know, stuff on major network television now that is, you know, incredibly graphic violence that, you know, has really, it's not surpassable. I mean, there's nothing you can do in terms of violence, in terms of fictionalized fake violence on screen that no one's ever seen before. You know, it can't be done anymore. And
yeah.
I know I sound like the guy that said, you know, we've invented everything and it was 1920, but I really don't think there's anything else you can do to a human body fictionally on screen that hasn't already been done in a horror movie. And so I think that's part of why some of these sort of lo-fi things are doing so well. It's because, you know, and they're involving like things that don't have anything to do with physical violence anymore anyway. And like ghost movies are having a moment right now, right?
Yeah.
And they have been for a few years. And, you know, it's not like ghosts chopping people up. It's just
right.
Ghosts. Like, maybe
right.
The worst-case scenario, the ghost possesses you. That's kind of, like, the worst thing that happens in a lot of these new movies. But they're really scary, and it's got more to do with the skill of the filmmakers. And that's not to say that violence can't be effective in movies anymore, because I certainly have seen movies where the violence is still effective. But the effectiveness, I don't think now has anything to do with, it doesn't have as much to do with the craft of making it look realistic, and it's a lot
right.
more to do with the circumstances and building towards it and, you know, just the filmmaking around it.
That's right, yeah, and that's a good point. I think maybe it should be said that directors are adapting well to that.
I mean, I think some of them have gotten better because they can't make a cheap, you know, you can't get a cheap thrill out of an audience anymore from just getting a bunch of pig parts and pretending they're human organs.
Well, there was another film I encountered, I think, after Texas Chainsaw, probably, I think, Paranormal Activity was the next one. But then I experienced a few years ago, I guess I was homesick, and I watched a bunch of movies, obviously. And this was about a year or so after this movie came out, but I really experienced that feeling of, I don't know if I can continue watching this. I might have to press stop and watch something else. And that was The Strangers. And it was very, it surprised me. I wasn't expecting that, and maybe that's part of it. But the idea that, and I don't want to spoil anything, but the idea that it can hit so close to home, wink, wink, and just the way that showed that for most of the film was the audience sees something that's there, that really is there, that the main character doesn't know of, doesn't see, has no clue of. And then great, it's dramatic irony, like, I've never experienced it. But it was very, you know, it was pretty low-key, but it was just horrifying.
I've never seen The Strangers. I know that that's definitely one of those categories that my wife can't handle and doesn't enjoy, is the home invasion movie.
Oh, neither do I. Yeah.
So, I mean, I would say if I'm looking at like the categories that work the most on me, because I heard Ben Flanagan mention, kind of as a rule for him, one of the things that bothers him is the idea of like, this could really happen.
Yeah.
And that actually weirdly has never done anything for me. Like that doesn't work for me. And I guess it's just maybe the way that I watch horror movies is I'm not putting myself in the situation. That's not why it scares me. It's more just, maybe I'm experiencing it on more of a visceral level, where I'm not really putting myself there. I'm just kind of experiencing exactly what I'm seeing, and I'm not contextualizing it with my life or anything. But I think for me, you know, that's one reason that's why these Paranormal Activity movies work for me. And they also tend to, I don't apply them to my life while I'm watching them, but I'll often find myself, you know, walking around my house later going, you know, boy, this spot in my house looks a lot like the thing I just saw in that movie. And, like, there's definitely one that comes to mind in the, I guess it's the third Paranormal Activity movie, right, where there, it's a flashback where it's from the 80s. Is that right?
The third one?
The one with the little girls?
Oh, I've never seen the third one.
Okay, so I will try not to spoil, but basically, in the third movie, it takes place before the other two, and the main characters from the first two movies are children.
Right,
and there's a scene where there's a scene involving, because a lot of the movie is filmed and takes place in this like little loft bedroom on the second floor of their house, and they have a crawl space, you know, so basically like a little door that's probably would come up to about your waist. And, you know, kind of like a little storage space. So a lot of stuff happens in the movie surrounding that space. And, you know, I remember it being, it was really effective. It was really well done. It's made by the guys that made Catfish. And, you know, they used little devices like that a lot, little features of the house they were working in. They would turn these very normal looking things into very scary devices that they'd return to over and over in the movie. And that crawl space, you know, again, I was never putting myself in their shoes or anything, but when I went upstairs that night to go to bed, and sure enough, we have a little crawl space like that in our bedroom. And I just remember looking at it going like, damn, I really wish that thing was not in my room right now. I really wish that little feature was not a part of this room.
Man, yeah, I'd have to move.
Yeah, so the worst part, by the way, is inside our little attic/crawl space, when we first moved in, it was like written in like black crayon, like little kids' names and stuff in there.
And there was a
dead, dried rose, like, pinned to the inside of the wall. So, I've already been a little bit creeped out by this space.
Holy
and now it's just kind of a sore subject now. I tried to tell Francesca the next day, I was like, hey, man, I've been really creeped out because in this movie, and she's like, no, don't tell me anything about it. So, I still haven't really fully related my fear to her about this.
Oh, my gosh. Sounds like Old Bryce.
It sounds like what?
Old Bryce. Did you ever go there?
Yeah. No,
I
did not take part in the Tuscaloosa tradition of sneaking into Old Bryce, but I've certainly heard about it.
Well, we can do that for GoonCon.
Yeah, right. That'll be.
Well, you know, that there was another movie that I remember that kind of struck me in that way, and it was, I just happened upon it. It was sort of one of those. I was at a friend's apartment. It's probably 2002. It wasn't really a party. It was more of an impromptu hangout with some friends. There were quite a few people there, but there was this movie on, and I just saw just a little bit of it, and I ended up grabbing a stool and sitting in front of the TV and sitting on the stool and just watching the TV while this whatever is going on around me is going on, and I'm just into this movie. Have you seen Session 9?
No, but I have heard. I've heard good things about it. Yeah,
it was. I don't even remember. I don't even know if this was a theatrical release.
I think it was maybe straight to DVD. I think you're right about that.
Oh, well, and it was just. I don't even know how to explain it. It had to do with some. It wasn't found footage, but it's like an asbestos cleaning crew cleans like an old psych ward, and they come across some tapes of children being treated for schizophrenia, and it's almost like they release something, and it is, it was rough, but it was great.
Yeah.
Amazing. But that was one that was where, I just absolutely love those moments, especially when I just happen upon them. But speaking of conjuring up the old tapes, another one, I know it's silly, but this is another one that when I watched for the first time, I think it was in high school. So my friend, I guess maybe 1998 or 99, my friend had let me borrow. This was really my gateway into like actually like appreciating film. He let me borrow Schindler's List. And then he let me borrow The Exorcist. And,
right.
And so I watched those in my room by myself that night in the dark. But what
that's a fun night.
Yeah. What got me was that he also let me borrow Evil Dead.
Yeah.
And that hit me worse than any of the other ones put together.
I think if you're a kid, especially, and you watch Evil Dead for the first time, like, I can imagine, I didn't see it when I was a kid, but I can imagine the humor not landing for a kid.
Yeah.
And it
right.
just all being utterly, bafflingly chaotic and terrifying.
Absolutely. The humor was more effective as, like, not caring about the horrible things happening to the character.
Yes, which can, I think, is probably really... That's not a, I mean, it's true that he doesn't really care that much about the characters,
yeah.
but, you know, I think they're sort of, they're not really very sympathetic anyway, and so,
right.
or most of them aren't. So, you know, that's one where, I mean, I do think it's really effective and it is scary at times, and there's parts of it that you want to cover your face and not watch it, but it's really fun to watch, too, as an adult that understands like what is being done here, like the over the topness of it, which I think if you haven't set your bar for like what is normal or what is conventional and you're a kid, you know, over the top probably just feels like your whole world is being effed up in front of you, you know?
Right. Yeah. I mean, it's just, and watching it again, the humor definitely landed. But had I not watched it again, I probably wouldn't be able to tell you that there was anything humorous about it. Just cackling and, you know, chaotic, just absurdness that translated into for me, at least. But, yeah, it's funny how movies like that when you're young can really hit you in a completely raw and effective way, most unlike they're intended to.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
Well,
well
yeah.
Lesson
learned. Probably don't show B or either of my children Evil Dead until they're at least like 12, maybe.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, hey, I was actually probably 15 or 16 when I saw it.
Even
so
still, I still
yeah.
think that's probably too. That's probably like it's still going to mostly go over your head, I would guess,
yeah.
for most 15-year-olds. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, and like I said, that was at the moment when I began to say, oh, there's a difference in movies and film. And my friend was, like, giving me all these movies to watch. And I think at that moment, I couldn't quite decipher between what a director was trying to do and just what's on a movie that's in front of my face.
Yeah, it's you just accept that everything is, you know, yeah, you haven't really gotten to where you watch movies with a critical eye and thinking
yeah.
about that a person made it, you know, they're just like,
right.
there's just these forces of nature that exist in your life.
Okay, man. Well, thanks for the talk.
Yeah. Thanks for putting up with me, eating burgers and fries while we were doing this.
Hey, no problem, man.
That's the most terrifying detail of all. In
go ahead and seal up that crawl space.
Yeah, definitely. I'm going to get some, you know, a caulking gun on my way home, and we'll just get rid of that thing.
For more from the Film Nerds, go to filmnerds.com and aspectradioshow.com.